particular phase off this shortly, and we can get back to some of the bride's material. Now, we're going to talk about Joseph's woman in Revelation. And that's what I've been discussing for the last couple of Sundays and on Wednesday night. I call her Joseph's woman because the woman is Israel, and a dream that Joseph, the son of Jacob, whom God later renamed Israel, is the one who had a dream concerning some symbols that are used in the book of Revelation. So I've titled this Joseph's Woman in Revelation. In Genesis, the 37th chapter and verse 9, Joseph had a dream. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren. Remember, Joseph had 11 brothers. And said, "Behold, I have dreamed a dream more." He had had one before this that he had told them about, and it made them mad. But this was the second dream. And then he told them what this dream was. "And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me." That means they bowed down before him as being in submission to him, as though he was a ruler over them. "The sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me." That's what happened in this dream. He saw the sun and the moon and 11 stars bowing down before him as though Joseph had been in a position of rulership over them. Well, it didn't take long for his father Jacob to figure out what that meant. And although Jacob, the man God later named Israel, didn't particularly like it, he did pay attention to it and made note of it, the scripture says. Now, later on in the book of Revelation, this symbol is used to picture a woman that represents the descendants of this man Jacob, whom God named Israel. And actually, this woman representing those descendants would represent what we call Israel, or the Israelites today. The sun, according to the interpretation that was given by Jacob himself, represented Jacob as the sun, which is mightier than the moon. And the moon represented the wives that Jacob had had that were the mothers of these 11 brothers of Joseph, plus Joseph himself. And the 11 stars represent his 11 brothers, Joseph himself being the 12th. Now, God uses that symbol in the book of Revelation, in Revelation 12, 1 through 5. Jacob is the sun, his wives the moon, and Joseph's brothers are the 11 stars. In Revelation 12, 1 through 5, God pictures something involving a great wonder in heaven. And Joseph's dream of heavenly things are the background behind it. "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman." Now that woman is the nation of Israel. I would say she represents the Israelites. I would say among the Israelites, there will be this remnant that I've been talking about for several days. "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun." There's the sun representing Israel or Jacob himself. "And the moon," that's the wives of Jacob, "under her feet," that's the feet of the woman that's pictured here, "and upon her head," the woman's head, "a crown of 12 stars." Now, by this time, the symbol has been changed from 11 to 12 because Joseph is also one of the stars, and so now instead of 11 stars, we have 12 stars, Joseph himself being the 12th. Now in verse 2, this woman representing the offspring of Israel, the man Jacob, what we call Israelites, "and she being with child cried, travailing in pain, in birth, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered." This pictures Israel as giving birth to the Messiah. Now, it's true that Mary is the one chosen to give birth to Christ, but she is a descendant of the man Israel. And she herself was an Israelite, and she was merely the one chosen by God to represent the whole nation of Israel. "And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon." That great red dragon, of course, is identified in this chapter as Satan, Lucifer, that old devil, the deceiver, "having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads." The 7 heads represent the 7 great empires that have dominated this world ever since God first chose the nation of Israel. It represents Egypt, followed by the Assyrian Empire, followed by the Babylonian Empire, followed by the Medo-Persian Empire, followed by the Macedonian or Grecian Empire, followed by the Roman Empire. Now the next great kingdom will be the kingdom of the Antichrist, and he will be the seventh kingdom, and the ten horns that are represented here are the ten nations that will arise, and the Antichrist as the little horn will come up and be over those nations. And seven crowns upon his head that represent the authority and the principal leaders of these seven governments from which all the evil expertise of this world has finally culminated in the final evil empire. And his tail, that is the dragon's tail, drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. This refers to an event in history in the past when Lucifer sinned, picked up his new name, Satan, the adversary, and at that time a third part of the angels in heaven chose to follow Satan. They followed him, and a third part of the stars of heaven fell spiritually and did cast them to the earth. That's the first fall of Satan from heaven, and the angelic horde, one-third, chose to follow him. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered. When Christ was born, it was through Christ, the promised seed, that eventually salvation was to come to man. And it was through the seed of the promise that God made to Abraham that men were to be redeemed. It is also through this seed, this remnant, that God is going to once again reestablish the nation of Israel as king, as the ruling nation on this earth. So the promise that was made to Abraham included a promise of the preservation of this remnant, and that eventually Israel would rule and reign for 1,000 years on the earth. But here we have the dragon, Satan, standing before, in this case, Mary, representing the nation of Israel. She's ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And you know what great lengths Herod went to try and have this child destroyed, killing all the children that were born in Bethlehem in that period of time with a two-year margin of error. And so you know what happened and how God protected the Christ child, and this is something that happened in the past. And she brought forth a man-child. Out of the womb of Mary, representing the nation of Israel, came Christ, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. You know that has not yet happened, but it will happen when he returns at the end of the tribulation period. And this remnant that he's going to preserve in the Negev wilderness, he will be the head over, and Israel will grow and prosper and be the ruling nation on this earth. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. And so Christ sets as King of Kings, Lord of Lords in heavens. He sets there as the intercessor between God and man. He's the man, Christ Jesus. And so this heavenly woman, representing the nation of Israel, has 12 stars in her crown, which represent the 12 brothers, that Joseph being the 12th. And the sun represents, of course, the man Jacob, who was named Israel later. And the moon representing his wives. Now, this symbol in the book of Revelation is also tied to the remnant. I've been talking about the time when the Antichrist would suddenly surge south. And here you see Syria and Lebanon outlined, and you see a brown arrow that is pointed directly south into Israel, and down in the southern part, in yellow with a red border around it, you see the Negev wilderness. I've been talking about this for the last several Sundays, and I've been talking about in Ezekiel 38:17 how God has indicated for a long time that the Antichrist would suddenly strike against Israel and catch her flat-footed. Ezekiel 38:17, thus saith the Lord God, art thou he of whom I have spoken in old time by my servants the prophets of Israel, which prophesied in those days many years that I would bring thee against them? And I've covered this in intricate detail, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Now, the important thing that I continually emphasize is you have got to understand prophecy as it was understood by the people of that day who read what was written by these prophets. And back in 600 B.C., if you're going to identify north parts, you have to identify it as what we call today Syria and Lebanon. Ezekiel 38:15. And thou shalt come from thy place, that's the Antichrist, out of the north parts, thou and many people with thee. The north parts, in the mind of Ezekiel, who wrote that, and to the people of that day, were what we call today Lebanon and Syria. There was no Lebanon. Lebanon was merely a part of greater, what we call greater Syria today. In Daniel 11, the Antichrist is identified as the king of the north. Daniel 11, and the king of the north shall come against him. Who was the king of the north to Daniel? It would have been either what we call Lebanon or Syria today. In Micah 5, the Assyrian shall come into our land. So when you talk about where the Antichrist is coming from, he's coming from Lebanon or Syria. And you see a purple line on this chart indicating his line of attack. He will roar southward, and he will go through the West Bank. The reason he'll go through the West Bank is because by the time Israel is attacked in the middle of the tribulation period, which I think is going to occur after the year 2000, not too far after it, the West Bank, many of those towns in there like Jenin and Nablus and Ramallah will already have complete autonomy and Arab rule in those small pockets. And they will be there to assist the Antichrist as he roars southward. All this will be done behind closed doors. It'll be a sudden and very abrupt attack on Israel. As he proceeds southward, he will drive the nation of Israel, what remains of it, after he has sacked Jerusalem. He's going to sack Jerusalem, rifle the houses, rape the women. They're going to bayonet babies. They're going to do all sorts of terrifying things. And as you can see from this chart, he then heads south toward where Israel is fleeing into the Negev wilderness. I'm going to talk about what's going to happen as he begins his push toward the south to completely wipe out the remnant, which will be in the Negev wilderness. And I'm going to show you why he will suddenly divert across into Egypt. I've already covered this in Daniel 11 from verses 40 on down through 45. And I've covered it in Daniel chapter 12. I've shown you how he would go into Egypt, and I've shown you what he would do and why in the past. But what's going to stop the Antichrist from going in past this red line that you see into this Negev wilderness where most of the Israeli military forces are located, in which they have their backyard, if you will, their behind-the-lines type of area set up for a last-ditch stand? There's going to be a tremendous earthquake. And 5/6 of the Antichrist army is going to be destroyed, according to Ezekiel 39, 1 and 2, not by the power of man, but by the power of God. So this particular segment has to do with God beginning to fight. The Antichrist has pushed them into the Negev wilderness. He's got them right where he wants them. He's ready to destroy them. And all of a sudden, the Lord begins to fight for the remnant. The Lord fights for Israel against the invading nations for 3.5 years after Jerusalem is sacked. God produces a great shaking to block the Antichrist's penetration into the Negev wilderness south of Beersheba. You've seen me present this over and over again for the last 18 years to show this tremendous cataclysmic shaking that is going to completely change the whole topography of the landscape of Israel. But it's going to be a worldwide shaking. Now in Zechariah 14, 1 through 3, this is a prophecy that has never yet occurred. Zechariah 14, 1 through 3, behold, the day of the Lord cometh. Now the day of the Lord can be a long period of time, a short period of time, but when it defines itself, you can tell what it is, and here it does. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. He's talking to the city of Jerusalem, and he's telling them they're going to be sacked, they're going to be conquered, they're going to be overrun. And the Antichrist will divide the spoils in the midst of the city itself. Zechariah 14:2. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. This will be something that God will do the gathering. The Antichrist is not going to be able to pick the time. He may think he is, and the devil's not going to be able to pick the time. God's going to pick the time, and he's going to do the gathering. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city, that is, Jerusalem, shall be taken. And the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity. Now this next statement is a very direct, definite statement to let the nation of Israel and those who are interested to know that the remnant will return to that city. And the residue, that God-breathed word, is remnant. Same translated throughout the rest of the King James translation. And the residue, or the remnant of the people, shall not be cut off from the city, letting people know that the remnant will return once they have been driven out and the city has been ransacked and the women ravished. Now, then it states in verse 3. Now, here's the way that God fights. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle. Then means, once Jerusalem has been sacked, Israel driven to the Negev wilderness, then all of a sudden, wham! God begins a cataclysmic series of events, natural phenomena, that eventually will destroy 5/6 of the Antichrist army that has come southward. Isaiah 24:17-22. Fear. During the tribulation period, you're going to see fear like has never existed on this earth before. Now, there are several different words that are translated pit in the Hebrew language. And sometimes, some of those words mean the grave. This one does not. This is a word that means something that opens up and then closes. Something that opens up, it indicates a sudden opening in the earth itself, either dug or opening of its own volition. Fear and the pit and the snare. Now, the word for snare means a particular type of snare. It means this type of a snare. Now, many people are familiar with a snare where you put a little box, tilt it up, put a little stick under it. You pull the stick and the box catches whatever's underneath it. This is a different type of snare. It's one where you've got something out like this, like a trap, a bear trap, or something out like this, and it's laying there. And something walks across it. And when something walks across it, there's a little trip stick in the middle. And when this, whatever it is that trips it, it closes up just like that and snaps it. And what this is picturing is fear on this earth, people running around in wild derision, and some type of a snare suddenly catching them just like that. I think it means the earth. I believe it's talking about a cataclysmic series of events that are going to be the most graphic and horrifying that have ever occurred on this earth, and no one's going to forget it for 1,000 years. Fear and the pit and the snare are upon thee, O inhabitant of the earth. This is the time of God's fighting. It's going to affect the whole earth, but especially there in Israel is God going to use it to defeat the Antichrist. And it shall come to pass, Isaiah 24:18, that he who fleeth from the noise of the fear, there is nothing more horrifying, graphically speaking, than the terrifying noise that comes when the earth is creaking and groaning and producing earthquakes. You can check with any geologist on this. You can ask anyone in California. The noise is graphic and horrifying. And it shall come to pass that he who fleeth from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit. I believe it pictures the earth itself as opening. That's why I've spent so much time on those tectonic plates. You may look in any reference source you want to look in. You'll discover the snare is the type that I told you. Here we have a snare with a trap in the middle. Somebody falls into the snare. And it indicates that this is what is going to happen all over the earth when people try to flee from this cataclysmic event that is occurring. They're going to fall into the actual cracks themselves. And I believe God will use the earth to fulfill his own prophecy by his own power. And he that cometh up out of the midst of the pit, once he falls in it and tries to come out, wham, shall be taken in the snare. For the windows from on high are opened, and the foundations of the earth do shake. This is a description in the Hebrew language of something that is almost undescribable in sheer absolute terror that will be coming on this earth when God, who made this earth, begins to shake it, rip it, tear it, and produce a natural holocaust that only God can produce as he moves these massive pieces of the earth's crust that float on these underground liquid lakes of rock called magma. The earth is utterly broken down. This implies a tremendous breaking of the outer crustal structure of the earth. The next part here is a little more difficult to understand in the King James translation. But I challenge you to look in any reference source you want to look into and to look up the original words. The earth is clean dissolved. If you just look at that, you get the impression that the earth completely disappears. That is not what that means at all. The God-breathed, inspired word is parar. Clean dissolve is the Hebrew word parar. Look in any reference source you want to look in. It means to break in smaller pieces. And the only reason I can figure the King James translators translated this as clean dissolved, if you have a huge vase, maybe that tall, great big vase made of clay, you can see it from 10 miles away. But if you push it over and break it and hold up one of the smaller pieces, you won't be able to see that smaller piece. Therefore, because you can't see it, they translated it clean dissolved. But I give you my word before the Lord. That word is parar, and it means broken in smaller pieces. The earth is broken in smaller pieces. As I'm speaking to you tonight, there are 21 tectonic plates, 21 different pieces of the earth's crust that float on these underground liquid lakes of rock called magma. By the time this tribulation period is finished, they may have been broken into as many as 35. The earth is moved exceedingly. That implies not only an external movement, but an internal movement itself. And it indicates that all over this earth, as these tectonic plates shift and move, huge cracks are going to open in the earth. And as people run from the fear of the terror, they'll get caught in the trap itself. The earth has moved exceedingly. When God made the earth, God made it to rotate on its axis. And it is not a perfect sphere. It is an oblate spheroid, slightly flattened at the poles. The weight internal measurements are not perfect. Perhaps they were at one time, but they aren't now. Whenever you have this cataclysmic an event with that liquid rock moving underneath the earth as it does, and the whole crustal section shifting, it causes the earth to totter on its geomagnetic axis, and it will cause it to wobble back and forth in space. Only God can do this, but as a result of what you see in those verses, it helps to explain verse 20. The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard, indicating the earth waving back and forth in space, and shall be removed like a cottage. I give you my word before the Lord. This word is meluna. Look it up for yourself. It doesn't mean just Molly and me and baby makes three. We're happy in my blue heaven. It doesn't mean a nice little beautiful cottage in which a married couple enjoy bliss. The word that is used there means like a man in a hammock swinging back and forth in between two trees. I have no idea why they translated it cottage, but that is not what the word means. It pictures the earth swinging back and forth in space. This cataclysmic event that you see in Isaiah 24:17 through 20 is of such tremendous magnitude that once the tribulation period is finished and the earth settles back into what I would call a pre-millennial phase, all the tension and pressure will have been taken off these cracks. The earthquakes during the millennial reign of Christ will be an absolute minimum. But the thing that's interesting is these cataclysmic changes will be of such great magnitude while they are occurring, the earth will never be found in exactly the same state it was in when they began. The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard and shall be removed like a cottage, and the transgression thereof shall be heavy upon it, and it shall fall and not rise again. It means it will never be found in the same state that it was in before. Now, in all this cataclysmic terror, this horror that's being unleashed, there is a spiritual battle that is also going on between Michael and his angels in heaven, and the devil and his angels. And finally, Lucifer is cast out from all access to God. He does have a limited access now, according to the book of Job. I want you to notice, with this continuing, I go Isaiah 24:17 through 22, and I want you to notice how these are connected with this terrifying event that we call the latter portion of the tribulation period. What's going to happen in the spiritual realm? Verse 21. And it shall come to pass in that day, in the day of the great shaking, that the Lord shall punish the host of the high ones that are on high. That is definitely referring to Satan and his whole demonic kingdom and the kings of the earth upon the earth. Now, I'll be open and honest with you. The host of the high ones that are on high definitely means the spiritual kingdom of Lucifer and the demonic kingdom that he heads on this earth at the present time that we cannot look into. I also believe that this next section does too, but I can't state that definitely. And the kings of the earth upon the earth. We all know that Satan has a kingdom down here, and the prince of Persia that is mentioned in the book of Daniel was one of the generals, if you will, of Lucifer, that Gabriel had a hard time getting past, and finally one of Michael's archangels, or Michael himself, came and was able to get through and carry the message to Daniel. At least Gabriel was, after the way was cleared. I really think this is talking about a spiritual kingdom, but I'll have to tell you openly, I could be wrong, and that might mean the physical kings of the earth that are upon the earth, and that's possible. But I do know the first part does, and it's talking about a confining of Satan and all his angels. Because in verse 22 it says, "And they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit." Now, this is not talking about the grave, because this particular Hebrew word is not used to refer to the grave. It's talking about an actual rut or an opening or a crack in the earth itself. "And they," meaning the high ones that are on high and the kings of the earth, "shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit." The earth is the bottomless pit. The earth is the abyssu priato, shaft abyss. In the book of Revelation, where it talks about, when it talks about this thing called the bottomless pit, "Heklaes tu priatos tes abyssu," the shafts of the abyss leading down through into the earth. "And they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit." It's talking about the earth as the bottomless pit, "and shall be shut up in the prison. For 1,000 years, God is going to collect all these spiritual demonic beings on this earth that currently can affect us and watch us, along with Satan himself, and they're going to be shut up in the earth for 1,000 years. "And they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit, and shall be shut up in the prison," that's the interior of the earth, "and after many days shall they be visited." After about 1,000 years, the Lord indicates that he will loose them from the bottomless pit. They will be visited, and they will be turned loose again on the earth at the end of the millennial reign. Revelation 21 through 3, and this is the same thing that he is referring to here. Revelation 21 through 3, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit," abyssu priatos, the shaft abyss, shaft abysses, that is, if you will, pits that go down into the earth, and a great chain in his hand. "And he laid hold on the dragon," that old serpent, which is the devil, "and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit." All of Satan's demonic horde, according to Isaiah, and John specifically identifying the devil, are going to be put in the shaft abyss that goes down to the interior of the earth. The earth is the bottomless pit. Squares like this pulpit have bottoms. Rectangles like this Lord's Supper table have bottoms. Cylinders have bottoms. Triangles have bottoms. But an oblate spheroid has no bottom. If you try to go through an oblate spheroid, you'll just come up on the other side of it. The earth truly is the bottomless pit. "And cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal on." This is a spiritual seal where they have to stay inside the earth and cannot come out for 1,000 years. "That he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season." So notice, "after many days shall they be visited." Then notice what John says in Revelation, "till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season." John is referring back to what Isaiah wrote. Isaiah 26, 20 and 21. Remember, this was written to the nation of Israel by Isaiah. He says, "Come, my people," that's Israel, that's the remnant, "enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee, hide thyself as it were." God is going to preserve a remnant, and he's going to protect Israel in the Negev wilderness. God's going to hide them and keep them from the Antichrist, exactly as he promised. "Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee, hide thyself as it were for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity." When the Antichrist is getting ready to surge down and overrun the remnant in the Negev wilderness, God is going to unleash the most fantastic series of earthquakes that have ever occurred in the land of Israel. They're going to occur north of the Negev wilderness, and God's going to literally wipe out the Antichrist army by his own power, at least 5/6 of it. "For behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood, and shall no more cover her slain." I've gone back and shown you this is a rapture. If you look back at 26:19, which I don't have on here, it's definitely a rapture. It's very clear. Isaiah's body, along with the other saints of that day, are come out of the grave, and their bodies are no longer covered. But when it says the earth shall disclose her blood, that Hebrew word is dam, and it is used to refer to any liquid having a blood red color, and I've proven that repeatedly in my lecture series. And this is talking about when these cracks open, this blood red liquid rock that geologists call magma, and it's called dam in the Old Testament, translated blood, will come flowing out on the earth, and the most hellacious, unbelievable series of events that have ever occurred will demonstrate the power of God. For 1,000 years, no one will dare cross Israel. Revelation 13, 4 and 5. And they worshiped the dragon, of course that's Satan, which gave power unto the beast, the Antichrist. And they worshiped the beast, the Antichrist, saying, who is like unto the beast, the Antichrist? Who is able to make war with him? And the point is, only God can defeat him. Verse 5. And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. He will claim to be the Messiah. He will claim to be the deliverer. And many Israelites will receive him. Now, how long is he going to be able to dominate the field in Israel? And how long is God going to have to protect his people in the Negev wilderness? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him, the Antichrist, to continue 42 months. That's the same thing as times, times, and half a times. It's the same thing as 1,260 days. It's the same thing as 3.5 years. 42 months, each month representing 30 days, a prophetic year being 360 days. Now notice what happens in Ezekiel when Antichrist comes down. Ezekiel 38, 18 through 21. And it shall come to pass at the same time when Gog shall come against the land of Israel. Now remember, he comes against the land of Israel. He sacks the city of Jerusalem. They rape the women. They drive Israel southward into the Negev wilderness. It shall come to pass at the same time when Gog shall come against the land of Israel, saith the Lord God, that my fury shall come up in my face. Remember what it says in Ezekiel 14 and 3. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. This is when God says, I've had it up to here, and this is when God begins to fight, and he does for 3.5 years. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day, in what day? In the day when Antichrist comes south, he drives them into the Negev wilderness, he overruns the city of Jerusalem. For in my jealousy and the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel. It will be the greatest series of earthquakes ever unleashed in Israel, but it will not be limited to Israel. All those red lines that I've shown you all these 18 years stretch across the surface of the earth. There are thousands of miles of these pits, these red lines, these shaft abysses that go down through the earth. You're going to see hell break loose on this earth, and this great shaking in Israel will be greater than anywhere else, and it's going to destroy 5/6 of the Antichrist army. So that the fishes of the sea and the fowls of the heaven and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep upon the earth and all the men that are upon the face of the earth. You see, these lines are all interconnected. These tectonic plates, 21 of them, control the world's earthquakes to a large extent. When they begin to shift and move, as indicated in the book of Revelation on the opening of the sixth seal, and the earthquakes continue right on through the seventh seal, right on through the seven trumpets, right on through the seven vials of wrath, and finally, on the last vial, you have the greatest earthquake of all. And there was a great earthquake such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. This is worldwide. And all the men that are upon the face of the earth, it doesn't just cover Israel, and all creeping things that creep upon the earth, shall shake at my presence. The tremendous shaking of God will leave an indelible impression inscribed in the minds of all those who come through the tribulation period in physical body, both Jew and Gentile, that God is God and there is no other, and nobody will dare to cross Israel. And the mountains shall be thrown down, and the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. If you take Ezekiel 38, 18 through 21, and you superimpose that on what the other prophets wrote, what you end up with is the Antichrist coming southward, Israel resting at peace, finally thinking she's got someone they can put their confidence in. He sweeps south using the Palestinians as his cover and zooms in and takes Jerusalem, catches Israel flat-footed. They think that finally there's somebody they can trust, and they've signed a peace treaty that they have confidence in, and then he pulls this sneak attack. And I will call for a sword against him throughout all my mountains, saith the Lord God. Every man's sword shall be against his brother. Now later on, I'm going to start talking about when God brings Israel back. And when she comes back, there'll be a mop-up operation. But on those hills of Israel, you're going to see mass confusion. You're going to see people that have come to destroy Israel fighting against each other. It's going to be such a holocaust, and such natural phenomena of confusion will be introduced into the situation that people won't even know who they're fighting half the time. Revelation 12, 13 through 16. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. That woman who brought forth Jesus Christ, the Virgin Mary being an Israelite representing Israel, is none other than Israel herself. When the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place. That wilderness is the Negev wilderness, that is the place, and it is the place that was prepared of God. Now, I have always said that I didn't think the United States was specifically mentioned in prophecy except maybe twice in the entire Bible. And that's just a maybe. If the United States is referred to in prophecy, this might be one of the cases. Of course, our national symbol is an eagle, and that's why many people identify this as the United States. I'm not quite sure that it's just the United States alone. I'm a firm proponent of the belief that when you interpret prophecy, you've got to interpret it in what was known at that time. In other words, when John wrote this in 95 and 96 AD, what was the known world? Well, you had Israel, and everything else to them at that time was Gentile. They didn't know about the United States. That doesn't mean God didn't, and I don't mean to infer that. But I believe that when it says, the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, I believe that's a massive airlift, probably to a large extent supplied by the United States. I left Vietnam in 1966 after having been there for a year. I was very interested in what happened after I left, so I kept track of it. We had a massive airlift that went in toward the end of the war to take out primarily Vietnamese children. If you will go back and check the history of wars that have occurred in many different countries in the last 30 years, you'll discover that there is always, almost always, an effort to send aircraft in to evacuate the young children. I think what's going to happen here is when the Antichrist strikes, the United States isn't going to do anything. We are not going to war with the Antichrist. We are not going to war with the Arab nations. We are not going to help Israel by involving ourselves in the war. I will guarantee you that. But I do believe that we will feel obligated to supply some humanitarian activity that will help Israel. And I think that we will send massive airlift quickly into that area to evacuate out as many as young Israelites as we can get out of Tel Aviv and out of the area to the north of what we call today Beersheba. And I think that the woman will be given tremendous assistance from some Gentile countries, perhaps Canada, the United States, Australia, maybe even Great Britain, to evacuate her people to this place of safety in the Negev. And I think that may be what that is referring to. And the woman were given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, that's a year, and times 2 years, and half a time, that's a half a year. 1 + 2 + 1/2 is 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days, however you want to put it. And notice, from the face of the serpent. Now, the Antichrist is facing toward the Negev, but he cannot get in to get her out. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman. I've changed my mind on this interpretation of Scripture in the 18 years I've been here. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, after Israel, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. At one time I thought that was literal water. I don't think so anymore. I think what it is referring to here is God using the earth, this pit, to open the pit and to swallow up a large portion of the Antichrist army that's following. Those faults in the area of Beersheba are hinge faults. And they're faults that during earthquake activity open up and then close. And I believe that what's going to happen here is the Antichrist army floods southward. You're going to see God destroy it by opening up the very earth that he created, and large segments of the Antichrist army will be destroyed in this terrifying shaking of the land. And the earth helped the woman, and the woman opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. So when it says, and the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood, and the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth, what I think that means is this. The Antichrist's vast army will flow southward behind her like a flood of water, but God will repay him. And so I wanted to cover those three, if I could. And Lord willing, on Wednesday night, I'll cover the next three that go with this series. I'd like to cover that particular segment that has to do with the Lord doing the fighting for Israel, showing what he's going to do to bring the remnant out and back into place. And then after that, Lord willing, I want to cover some of the Antichrist activities that he's going to be performing during that 3.5 years that I hope you find interesting. And the reason I'm covering all this is because I feel very strongly that recent events in Israel, particularly the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, are going to accelerate the peace process. And I honestly believe that most of you sitting here, perhaps all of us, will still be here when some of these events are actually occurring. There are some things between now and the time that the peace treaty is signed that I'm a little uncertain about. I do know a peace treaty will be signed. But what I'm showing you on this screen, I'm very confident about. Once this Antichrist arises to the north of Israel, and I think by the year 2000 we'll be able to identify him, I believe that at that time we can tell what's going to happen the rest of the way. Maybe not in a time sequence, but I know the Antichrist is going to attack Israel. I know that eventually this peace treaty will come into existence. And I know that we are in the very last days and that the time of the coming of Christ is near, even at our doors. So I feel obligated to go over this material and to talk about it because I think it's going to occur in most, perhaps all, of our lifetimes. As Johnny comes, as Kay comes. Yes, sir. Yeah.